Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer. We're here at the SiriusXM studios at the Wynn in Las Vegas. I thought I had been with Hall of Famers my entire career until I was up here with my co-hosts. These are the Hall of Fame co-hosts that I've had. Greg, you've been bringing it all day. Greg Kimble with the final percent. Thanks for joining me, brother.
My pleasure, man.
And of course, the brand expert, the billion-dollar brand man himself, the rhymer, the rapper, the incredible inspirer, Sean Rais. My Hall of Fame host, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. You're quite lyrical yourself, so sometimes I just
I'm working on it. I'm working on it. Middle-aged mutant rapper, Dave Meltzer. Speaking of which, everybody knows John Assaroff, and that's because he is already a legend and a Hall of Famer. Has changed so many people in my spheres of influence life by giving them a different way, a better way to see things, to inspire others, to empower others, simply to live their best life at their potential. John, it's an honor to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, David. So wonderful to be here.
It's awesome. Now, I get to my favorite Hall of Famer, and I know that's going to piss off a few
you
of my
know
other
it
Hall
is
fans. Yeah. That's okay. He's taking a chance by telling me Marissa, my daughter, is his favorite Meltzer, and we won't tell Julie until she sees this. Marshall Faulk,
get
I always
me in
say
trouble, man.
Number 28 in your playbook, number one in my heart. Our relationship, Marshall Faulk and I, have grown over decades, and he just keeps showing up bigger and brighter for so many people, not just me. Marshall, first of all, thank you so much, as always, for being a part of our shows.
No, it's an honor, man. It's an honor to be here, sit here and chat with you guys, man. It's always awesome. Like, it's funny that every time you do the show, I don't care which side I'm on, there's just a different perspective, and there's always something different. Like, I'm so intrigued by today, just to have this conversation. Because like I don't think I've like sat down with the three of you, so it's I'm intrigued by what intrigues you guys.
And that's what I love about you, is you're always curious. You're more interested than interesting.
Yeah.
One thing that happened last time we were together, we did a fireside chat about giving, and you said that you don't mind asking. In fact, you love asking.
Oh yeah,
because you have all this faith. And I said, oh, here's an opportunity to take the heat off of me for once. I do 200 of these charitable events a year, and I'm always the one doing the ask. I said, Marshall, would you mind? My ask is, would you mind doing the ask for me for the Unstoppable Foundation? And he, without blinking, said, oh, yeah.
Oh, and he did a good job.
And he did a great job.
Yeah.
Set a record at VIP dinners. Set a record for the most money raised at a VIP dinner, and he just went at it. And to me, was one of my favorite things that's ever happened in our friendship. We've always shown up for each other. You know, I tell my kids every day, I love you, I'm proud of you, and I always have your back. And it was because my dad never said those three things to me. Mom, all the time. And I knew what it meant for me, for my mom to say it. But man, for a friend like Marshall, since he's been a teenager at San Diego State, to know that a guy like Marshall Faulk loves me, is proud of me, and always has my back, not just because he tells me, but he continually shows up and shows me.
Yeah.
There's no question. And I hope all of you have a friend like Marshall Faulk that continues to do those things for everybody else and in such a humble way. There's very few people that have achieved what Marshall Faulk has achieved in his life, on and off the field. And to have a friend like that, my question is, you know, where did that ability to have that much faith in your position to just so confidently and comfortably ask people to help you in the charity that night, where does that come from?
I think before you are comfortable with asking people to do something, you first have to be willing to do.
And how'd you start your ask?
And you know what I did was, I was like, here's what I'm giving. And then nice. I start asking. And I just believe that if we want people to follow us, you have to lead in a certain manner, and you cannot ask people to do things that you're not willing to do. Mm-hmm. And that's just like that's basic principle. It's like I decided how I was going to parent and how I was going to be by how I was parented. Because like parents sometimes ask their kids to do things that they never did, that they weren't willing to do, that they didn't even try to do. And it's hard to get today's youth to do stuff that you're not willing to do. And or if you don't have something saying you've done it to the degree because they're smarter, they have more information, and they're okay with throwing it back at you. They're okay with asking you, well, what about you? And you wanna be a little condescending, like, don't worry about me. But then you walk away and you're like, well, what about me? you literally start asking yourself that. And I'm just a firm believer in, you know, you don't. I feel like and I'm gonna say this, in politics today, we send people to war because we don't have to go. Back in the day when you were the general and you say we were going to war, excuse my French, your ass was on a horse, you were first and you were going to war.
Yeah.
It was so different. And in today's world, it's just different.
Yeah.
Send in the drones.
Yeah, exactly. <There you go. laughs> Which is better than our sons.
Yep. Well, yeah.
And daughters.
And daughters now, yes.
You know, I met you at the Denver Aspire tour, and you are the personification. There's a lot of times where they say, like, don't meet your hero. So you are my dad's all-time favorite, like, NFL player. So on my Instagram, and he when I got home that night, he's like, how the hell were you just hanging out with Marshall? I was like, well, I didn't know he was going to be there, but like, he's like, well, tell me about him. Like, who was he? Like, is he this? And we have this saying in our family, words lie, energy doesn't. And you have got some of the best energy on planet Earth. Like, you are a thermostat. And so much so when he raised his hand and he said, like, here's what I'm going to put in. Who's what? I was like, yeah. I was the first person to say, I'll match it. Let's go. And it was just so refreshing to see someone who has had the limelight and they bring it, but like they bring it at the level that they did on the field, but like at a charity dinner, at who they are as a human being, their energy level, like a real honest to God thermostat that says, no, this is the temperature of the room. We're going to take it up. So I just want to say thank you. And it's just awesome to get to know you and call you friend, and you're awesome. So my question is, because we're so driven by status, we're driven by the accolades, we're driven by the rings, we're the stats, all of these things. What is your favorite stat on the stat sheet? Like, what's the one that you think of where you're just like, is it the ring? Is it the yards? Is there a moment? Like, what's the one where you're like, if I have to pick status, what's the one that you kind of point to that sits on your soul?
It's funny because I literally had to think about this. And now that I'm coaching at Colorado, I sit in the room with a bunch of 18, 19, 20 year old guys. And I was thinking about how I wanted them to actually know me.
Yeah.
And then how do I want them to understand playing this position and what the position means to me?
Yeah.
A lot of times when you look at the game of football, one of the positions that's like easiest for guys to come in and have success is running backs.
Yeah.
And so we get labeled dime a dozen. We're the guys who you want to replace. Actually, in the last 20 years, if you look at the number, the franchise tag number, in 20 years, the only position that it's went down is running back. All right?
That's wild.
So of all the accolades that I've ever received and things that people said about me, at one point in time, in the game of football, I was considered the smartest person in football. And I was like, that right there is something that it doesn't has anything to do with how fast, how high I jump, how far I run, how strong I am. Like, this is something that I get to work on day in and day out and get better and better and better and better. And
that's cool.
You could line me up against anybody. And that this right here, you're not taking this away.
That's so
And so now when I talk to them and I'm teaching them, I'm like, I want you to understand what I'm asking you to do.
Yeah.
And at any point in time, you don't stop me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing a good enough job teaching you. Don't let me just go on. Don't pretend like we're not in this room right here. This is where you get better.
Yes.
So the element of education and me understanding, not just in football, what I had to do, what the other 10 guys in the huddle had to do, but then what the other 11 guys had to do and what their jobs were.
So good.
Like I always tell people, one of my favorite stories, my late great friend, Junior Seau, he was somebody I hated playing against. And I was the guy that if you were a good football player, then it was going to make me a better football player because I knew what you had to do. And as long as you did your job, I was going to be successful. Now, the idiot or the guy who took chances and you were not where you were supposed to be, you got me. You always got me. And that was Junior. Yeah. Like it's a zone play. His instinct would tell him, I'm blitzing. And literally he stopped the play. His instinct were so good that he defied coaching more than anybody I ever seen. And that got him in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. That's so good.
His instinct was amazing. So I just believe that, you know, there's a lot of things that we can be great at and a lot of our, you know, physical attributes and what we do, but mentally,
yeah.
If people says something about you, think about whatever industry you're in. Think about what you do. And if they say, you're the smartest person to ever do this, that's like, whoa. Like it blows you away. But literally
that.
At night, you lay down and you're like, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, hell yeah.
I'll tell you one thing, Noah Marshall, the most impactful award was one that he didn't get and that he did deserve, which is the Heisman Trophy. And what he learned from not getting something, an award that he did deserve, was probably one of the greatest growth experiences of his life, and one in which I also learned to truly admire and respect his mom.
Oh yeah,
for the way that she treated him when he didn't win an award that he deserved. And and you can imagine at a younger age, unlike the MVP of the Super Bowl, Super Bowl champion, Offensive Rookie of the Year, 3-time Offensive Player of the Year, smartest player ever to play the game, awards like that, I always look at what we don't get sometimes and the lessons that are learned, because we really don't learn when we do succeed and when we win. We really learn when we lose.
Can I share the story?
Please, yeah, that's
so hoping. I'll tell you guys. So maybe the biggest award that I was on stage to win, and it was literally a runaway. The guy who actually won the Heisman, every time I see him, I ask him, how's my Heisman? True facts. And he will vouch for this. But, I mean, I put up some numbers, and I'd done some stuff. And in college, like, this award was to put not just myself, but West Coast football, San Diego State on the map. This was before Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart at SC doing, this was like before them. I'm at the Heisman and I'm like, I'm ready. I'm ready to accept this award. I'm ready to shout out my people back in New Orleans and my family sitting there. And I'm so excited about this moment. And, O.J. Simpson walked up to me and he said, you know, the first time I was here, I didn't win. And I'm listening to him talk to me, and I was like, okay. I was like, well, I'm winning. I'm winning. And they called somebody else's name. And I left. I went upstairs and I'm pissed off. And my mom came up there and she was like, listen, right now, I understand you didn't win, but this isn't about you. This is about the last name that you carry. So you come down here and you do interviews and you show them how the man I raised. And that changed my life. Literally.
Character.
Yeah. Yeah. It started, I was like, you like something like that, like humbled me, obviously losing humbled me, but what it took to go down there, congratulate him, do interviews, like for the rest of my life, it put everything else in perspective.
Thank you, Mom.
Yes. Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Mom, the ultimate mentor.
Thank you, Mom.
Oh yeah.
Thank you, Mom. Yeah.
Beautiful. Now, at that point in time, she probably couldn't have whipped me, but she probably would have tried.
And you would have let her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you would have held back you laughing.
100%.
A couple words that come to mind: authenticity, accountability, transparency, vulnerability. I'm probably the one that the least knowledgeable here when it comes to sports. Like, that's not my thing, so I really didn't know who you were. But still, the words that come to my mind, not knowing the past, not knowing the things that you've done on the field, authenticity, accountability, leadership. Those are the things that come to mind when you talk about how you treat the scholars in the trainings, right? Being forthright. Coming from San Diego State and how your mother talked to you about that, another word that comes to my mind is confidence. With the background that you may have had, overcoming adversity, getting to the place that you did, and being a representative for people that are trying to overcome their hurdles or their life struggles or their sense of inequality or inopportunity, what part does confidence play and what part does leadership play in the brand that a person is trying to build for themselves? Because that brand becomes that legacy, right? Your morals, your values, your principles, the things that you enact, the things that you do, the decisions that you make. What part does confidence play? What part does leadership play?
Well, confidence is, it plays a huge role every day in life. For me to walk through these doors, walk in this room, and make sure that not only do I accept the energy in here, but I bring some energy into the room. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to feel a certain way about yourself. And, you know, real people understand fake and phonies. And real people recognize real. That's it. Mm-hmm. And I'm me. This is me. Like, you can catch me, you know, a month from now, 6 months from now. This is me. And I'm always be me. I understand what confidence is. And I understand what confidence appears to people who aren't confident. People aren't confident. Sir. You would have felt my energy and you would have felt like I was cocky. And it's not because of anything that I did. It's because of what you're not.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I never allow that. I never allow that to affect me. I understand who I am and what I am. And there's some people who are equally as confident, but nobody's more confident in themselves than I am in me. So I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. And I just hope that people, they become fine with themselves and where they're at and stop judging me and maybe look at themselves and wonder why they're not as confident in who they are. So that's my whole spiel on confidence. Leadership is a whole nother thing. You know, leadership, it's developed. You know, I believe there's three phases of leadership. You first have to learn how to lead your damn self. Because mm-hmm. if you can't lead yourself, you ain't going nowhere. Then you learn how to lead others, and then you learn how to lead leaders. Mm. See, there's people who know how to lead others, but everybody can't lead another leader. You got to have other people who lead. You got to be able to convince them that what you're doing and what you're talking about is what they want to do as well. And you can't do none of that without confidence. You can't even lead your damn self if you're not confident. You're going to be a follower the rest of your life if you lack confidence.
You know, John, I learned so much about Marshall, but understanding that idea of believing in yourself, confident in yourself. How many people do you think have more confidence in themselves than others have in them? And I'm thinking in a positive realm that, you know, as a parent, I'm looking at my kids going, God, if they only knew how much confidence I have in them.
That's good.
And as they mature, I want them to, if they just had the confidence that I had in them, and, you know, to think about the fact that you and I share that attribute, that I believe in myself, and the only times I didn't when I wasn't acting appropriately. And then I didn't like myself and I lost the confidence in myself and I wasn't a great leader anymore. And then the ultimate leader to me, the leaders of leaders, learn to be intelligent followers. And that's what this show is about, because this is about five intelligent followers in a room right now. And you get an MBA in a day or an MBA in an episode on Office Hours by bringing in great people from all different walks of life that have this common denominator of competency, creating confidence, creating leadership. And John, you too illustrate that every day for me as a friend and a mentor, just like Marshall. We're all local San Diego people, so must be some magic down there. And also some touches.
Our paths crossed in Indianapolis.
That's right.
Many Mine decades too. Earlier with Jimmy Irsay and Gary Pageant
yep.
and
yep.
A few folks. I have a slightly different question for you. And I love understanding the inner game, right? Like the mindset to rise above. And I was taught that we get praised in public for what we practice in private. And being a professional athlete at the highest level of the game with the accolades that you've achieved, what were the things you did in private? And I'm not talking about on the field, just practicing every day. What was the attitude you brought to life on the field during pro sports? And then you obviously took it into your entrepreneurial life after sports. What are some of the things that you've done or do to just play that game, you know, at the level you've played at and continue to play at?
It's I'm glad you asked that. Like it's one of my favorite questions is when people ask me when people aren't looking, what are you doing? Yeah. I'm practicing. I'm
how,
getting ready.
How specifically?
I'm getting ready. Okay. I practiced for today. I was like, how was I going to present today? What was I going to do today? I get ready. I prepare. I make sure that I understand exactly what it is I want to convey and I want to do. A lot of times. The moment comes and you're not ready for it. And for me, I'm like, I'm gonna get ready for it because I don't care when it comes. I want to make sure that I'm able to do the things that's necessary for me to take advantage of the moment. Mentally, I never have to get ready because I'm always ready for whatever it is. I wasn't sure what the questions were going to be today, but what I do know is whatever it was going to be, you were going to get my most honest and my best answer that I have. And that's all I can do. Control what you can control and allow what you can't control to go. That's cool. And that's, I'm very simple, very simple. And the more simple that I get, the more successful that I get.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
So it sounds like self-talk and preparation.
Always. Always preparation. Always preparation. I'm in the mirror. I'm in the mirror. I brush my teeth beyond the 2 minutes that the brush says, telling myself how good a day I'm going to have, how great I'm going to be today, that I'm going to be the best on the show today. Like a lot of self-talk.
do you ever, have you ever used visualization, seeing yourself achieving any of the awards or the successes you've achieved?
That's just a part of me sitting here right now. I like my feet can't take me where my eyes can't see. So I saw myself here. I've been here before. The things that I've accomplished, it's not that I knew I was going to accomplish them, but I was going to be successful. I didn't know at what, but I knew I was going to be successful. And I still, in today's, like right now, the things that I'm doing, I'm going to be successful at what I do. I just don't get to pick how successful or when it happens. I just get to keep working at it and allow it to fall in place.
Love it. Thank you.
You know, I've got one quick question. You were like, if we talk about, instead of like the preparation and the beginnings and the visualization, you're such a rare person because you've like stood on the world stage. Like you've been in the moment. And most people, when they get the opportunity for the big moment, the moment kicks their ass. It kicks it their ass physically, kicks it mentally. But like you got to the moment and you kicked the moment's ass. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, when you're in the middle of the moment, what's your mindset?
The moment is just exactly what it is. It doesn't control my life. It doesn't. It's, if I don't do what I need to do here, it's not going to break me. I'm gonna get up.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try again.
You're a perseverance expert.
That's it. Like I'm like the moment only breaks the people who think that this is their only moment. I'm going to have more moments.
That's good.
Like, I'm going to have more moments, man.
That was so good.
This is just one
that
moment.
Was so good.
Well, that's all it is.
Marshall told a story about his first game in Indy, and he fumbled. Eesh. And he's known for not fumbling. And the offensive lineman, I forget his name, he got back in the huddle. And excuse my language. The guy grabbed his face mask, looked at him, and said, "Son, I got six fucking kids. You cannot ever fumble again."
Everybody hopes and dreams.
Let me ask one more thing. For the kid that's looking at this right now, who's down on his stuff, man, doesn't have the opportunity, doesn't see the success, doesn't think it's possible for him, listening to the music, doing what the music says, caught up in the worldly nonsense, going nowhere. What is your words to him?
Get up.
Daddy boy.
Get up. Come on.
Get up and do what?
Whatever. Something.
Positive.
Anything.
Something positive.
Do something. Like, stand. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you're down is done.
Down is
if you get up, some opportunity will present itself. Whatever you do when you get up is going to be better than you're doing if you stay down. I'm not going to just tell a blank kid, da-da-da-da-da. You know, there's all kind of cliches and sayings. The world is full of those. Here's the reality. If you can get up, you're going to find something to do. You're going to do something positive. You're going to learn from whatever knocked you down. Mm. If not, it's going to knock you down again.
Yeah, I would say if you can look up, you can get up and then go ask for help or help somebody else.
Yes.
You know, some of the best pieces of advice I give as a coach, a mentor, and a teacher, when people don't know what to do, I'm like, then go do something for someone else. Fastest way to get to where you want to be or better is to find someone and help them get to where they want to be or ask somebody that's already there, like I mentioned earlier, for help, for directions, for the way to get to where they are and find those people either way. That's what Marshall Faulk's been doing since he's been a teenager. I've been watching and listening and learning from him for decades. He just looks a lot younger than me, but he's a lot wiser. And he is, thank goodness for all four of us, the smartest man in this room.
Yeah,
which
for
means
sure.
I'm in the right room. Marshall Faulk, Hall of Famer on and off the field, number 28 in your playbook, number one in my heart. Thank you so much for joining us here today on Office Hours.